Our next case this morning is United States v. Dockman, case number
132353. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The issue that I want to focus on this morning relates to the third issue in our brief concerning how the sentence was imposed and what kind of sentence was imposed. The issues are crystallized best, I think, if we refer ourselves to the government's brief at pages 38 and 39 and their citations of the Seventh Circuit cases in Vizcarra and Collins, both relatively recent cases from the circuit. Two cases are highlighted by the government, and we accept them as normative premises for the argument that I'm presenting. Essentially, Vizcarra says is that a sentencing court's failure to address a non-routine argument in mitigation, if the argument is substantial enough, amounts to procedural error. We strongly feel that, regrettably, procedural error was committed in connection with this case, because the principal argument that was advanced in mitigation, the one in which all of the defendant's hopes resided for any kind of mitigation, any kind of leniency in sentencing, was not discussed, not addressed, not even mentioned in connection with the court's ultimate findings. And those ultimate findings were 120 months in prison for an individual who, our argument at least contends, will never survive that kind of time.
Well, the judge did, in fact, spend a lot of time discussing the medical issues.
Actually, the judge only spends time speaking to the medical issues with respect to which facility the individual should be sent to. He spends absolutely no time on all of these factors. First and foremost is the pre-sentence report. That's sort of the Bible of the case. And there are four pages devoted to both medical conditions, physical and medical conditions, mental. Paragraphs 63 through 73 of that particular pre-sentence report. That report reveals, among many other things, and I don't have the time to list all of them, congestive heart failure, a history of coronary artery disease, a left kidney having been removed because of a carcinous renal cell there. It reveals a history of colon cancer, recent. It reveals
right. There's no question that the district judge was aware of all of that evidence, was acutely aware of all that evidence, and he also listened to the testimony of the sentencing hearing amplifying on it and took it into consideration in arriving at the sentence.
Your Honor, that's where we disagree, because, in fact, nowhere in the transcript of the sentencing will you find the court addressing either the issues raised by the pre-sentence report, the issues raised by the defense position paper, all of the medical testimony, all of the medical doctors' reports, all of the actual documents. Nowhere does the judge address the oral arguments with respect to that, the presentations made by the government in its position paper. Nothing.
Didn't
is
he make
said.
A finding that the prison system would be able to adequately provide for your client's health needs? And isn't that addressing the issue?
Absolutely not.
And essentially rejecting the position that your client's medical care was so complicated, so extreme, that no prison could handle it.
No, that's not the issue that was raised. There were two issues raised. The first issue is classic mitigation. When an individual is 55 years of old, years of age, and the only testimony is that he has about 5 years to live, it is classic mitigation.
That's not classic mitigation. That may be argument for leniency as to the length of the sentence or the site of the sentence, but it's not in mitigation of his culpability for the crime.
No, I'm not suggesting that he pled guilty. There's no issue with respect to guilt or innocence. It is with respect to the 3553A factors, the first, foremost, and singular issue for which there is not one comment from the sentencing judge concerning how, if at all, it affected the amount of time he imposed.
It has nothing to do with the severity of the offense. Right?
I'm sorry?
It has nothing to do with the severity of the offense.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. It has everything to do with it. As a matter of fact, even under the guideline system where it was mandatory, 5H1.4 gave a policy statement which specifically stated that a court could depart from the guidelines with in the face of extraordinary medical circumstances. And
right,
particularly,
that has nothing to do with the 3553A factors. And it has nothing. His medical condition has nothing to do with his culpability or role in this offense. So it's not. It doesn't mitigate in that sense. It has an effect on sort of the end game determination on where he should serve the sentence, you know, maybe how much time he should get, but it doesn't in the evaluative process of looking at the severity of the offense and the character and background of the offender for purposes of deciding on what the just punishment is. It doesn't have anything to do with that.
That Your Honor, most
unless it has something to do with his role in the offense, which no, that's not how I understand it.
No. Title 18, Section 3553A, in its very first line, says that the court shall consider equally both the nature and circumstances of the offense and the history and characteristics of the offender. Not just the nature and circumstances of the offense. The history and the circumstance and the background and the characteristics of the defendant make a difference because we are in an era of individualized sentencing.
What when you look at Dr. Schiff's analysis and whatever his 3 hour a day treatment and doing all kinds of things, this guy, I don't know how he's going to survive anywhere, frankly. Well, they say, well, he may live for 5 years. He weighs 450 pounds and he has everything you can think of wrong with him. And the other thing, as far as mitigating, somewhere along the line, he spent $2 million of somebody else's money doing what, I don't know, but it must not have been enhancing his health.
There is no question, and I am not asking for this individual to avoid punishment. What I'm asking
where
for...
Where will he go? Whatever the doctor's name, he goes through a long list of how they can get decent treatment somewhere in prison. But obviously this man needs two or three people attending him.
Which he's not going to get, which
no.
is part of the reason why he'll
so
never survive.
He shouldn't go to prison.
Your Honors will note United States versus Craig, Judge Posner's decision, which was submitted, which says courts should be very mindful of giving de facto life sentences, which is exactly what Your Honor is bringing up, because the costs associated with taking care of this individual, if they're going to do it properly, which is a big if, is so overwhelming. And each year that he serves, compared to a relatively healthy person that's the same age, takes a substantially greater bite out of his foreseeable lifespan. So that a 10-year sentence is a de facto life sentence. And it is substantively unreasonable, and it never in the entirety of the transcripts which were before the court, and I urge Your Honors to reread them carefully, you will never see a single reference concerning how those severe, complex history of chronic life-threatening illnesses might have impacted on reducing the sentence. It just never is discussed.
Your time has expired.
I appreciate that. I believe that there was a procedural error. I believe that there was a substantive error in connection with the sentence that was imposed, and I ask the court very respectfully to remand the matter for resentencing. Thank you.
Mr. Harjani.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Sunil Harjani for the United States. Your Honor, the issue of the defendant's medical situation was fully addressed by the district court, and there is no abuse of discretion. it's very important to focus on how the issue was framed to the district court. In the sentencing brief submitted by the defendant, the argument was the BOP cannot care for this defendant. They don't have specialists, they have generalists, and they have internists. That was the argument that was submitted even before we reached the sentencing hearing. When we arrived at the sentencing hearing, the crux of that hearing was whether or not the BOP had the ability to care for this defendant. The testimony of the defendant's brother, Kerry Dockman, was completely about how the defendant needed specialists and that the best he could get in the prison system was generalist or internist. The argument by the defense counsel was crystal clear. He said, and I quote, "Our position is that the BOP does not have the ability to care for this defendant." And the arguments by the government was that the BOP did have the ability to care for the defendant because there were specialists available. And in the record, we submitted information from the BOP who had reviewed the defendant's medical records and made the conclusion they had the ability. There were facilities at Springfield, Missouri, and their facility at Butner, North Carolina, both of which...
Those prison hospitals of some sort?
Yes. Those are the medical regional hospitals that are part of the prison system.
It sounds like, based on what I read, he's going to be spending all of his time there.
He is certainly spending a lot of his time seeing specialists and his primary care physician.
Yeah.
And he is currently at the low prison facility. Indeed, one of the interesting things is the BOP determined he wasn't sick enough to actually be in the medical facility. They have much more serious patients who need to be in there. So he's next door at a low prison system, and he gets to go over there to see the specialist.
What do you call it, a low prison system?
Right, low security prison of the Butner facility. And he is shuttled over there to see specialists and then brought back.
It doesn't sound like he's even capable of escaping. So.
Not at all. Understood. But what the BOP has determined, in fact, despite the dire claims by defense counsel, both here and sentencing, the BOP has determined he's actually not sick. He's not as sick as their sickest patients who are in the medical facility full-time, as opposed to Mr. Dockman, who is outside of it and is taken there to see specialists. And that's why you have the district court addressing the issue of whether or not the BOP can give him specialist as opposed to generalist and physician assistants. The district court found that the arguments made by defense were really about the MCC or maybe other prison facilities in the U.S., but with respect to the BOP, they had Springfield and they had Butner, and their specialists were available to care for the defendant. That is how the argument was framed. That is both before sentencing and at sentencing. That is the argument was addressed by the parties, and that is how the argument was decided by the district court, rejecting the defense's position, and it was fully considered. The court has only reversed these situations where a principal mitigation argument is passed over in silence, not considered at all. This, in fact, is completely different. We have an issue that's been fully litigated. It was fully aware to everybody involved. There was testimony at the hearing. It was addressed by the district court. This is not one of those situations where an argument gets passed over in silence, such that the court doesn't have the ability to review it. It's only afterwards, now that we're on appeal, the defense has changed the structure of the argument, claiming that medical issues as inherently mitigating circumstance was not addressed. But the reality is that wasn't the issue that was discussed below. The issue discussed is the ability of the BOP to care for it.
Putting the BOP where he goes, right?
Pardon? Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is entirely in the discretion.
The decision isn't reflective other than recommendation.
That's correct.
And
in this case,
they've already evaluated him as being in the, what do you recall, the low-level prison that's proximate to the medical services, as opposed to being in there where someone else is on life support, I suppose.
That's correct. And this case is actually somewhat different in that there were actually steps made and taken by the government along with defense counsel to make sure he went to the right place. So Springfield and Butner were in everyone's mind, and what really happened is steps were taken to ensure he went to one of these two places rather than Oxford or something where there was no hospital. And in fact, he ended up at Butner so that he could get the necessary specialist.
Well, it's clear the prisons are assuming a big, expensive liability, so this isn't a small matter.
It certainly is an expensive endeavor, but taking into account the 3350A3A factors, the characteristics of the defendant is only one prong of that. Underneath that is his ability to get care. Beyond that, there are many other factors, and those were adequately discussed by the district court. The severity of the crime, the harm caused to the victims, $4 million loss to all the victims, $2 million of which, as one of your honors noted, he didn't spend on himself getting medical care. He spent on the vacations in Alaska and in Italy, on the gambling at the Venetian Hotel, on the tattoo parlor by his brother-in-law. Those are all the things that, in response, where that money went, the Lake Forest home mansion that he purchased. Instead of spending it on the business, he spent it on his own personal extravagant expenses. The court considered the need for just punishment for this defendant, for the amount of harm he had caused. There were victims that came at sentencing who talked about the fraud that was inflicted on them. They were 70, 75 years old. They were used their retirement saving funds to invest in this defendant's business because they believed in him, and they talked about how they have to continue working now because these funds were gone and didn't have retirement funds to live on. The court considered the defendant's prior conviction for fraud, the fact that he had two orders of contempt from Judge Pallmeyer in the civil case where he defrauded the receiver and refused to return rare books that he had purchased with the defendant's the investor's money. He talked about the seven bankruptcies that this defendant had filed in the Northern District, running businesses, going to bankruptcy, and then starting up all over again. The medical issue was one part of a much larger record, fully considering the 3553A factors in announcing a sentence of 120 months. Unless there are any other questions, Your Honor, we ask you to affirm the sentence below. Thank you.
Thank you. I thought we have a second counsel doing rebuttal. Is that not the case? Okay. I'll give you a minute.
If the court pleases, what is important to understand about the government's position is, first, they acknowledge that, in fact, one of the characteristics that needs to be considered at sentencing, one of the primary sentencing considerations, is the history and characteristics of the offender. Exactly what I had said, they have said. The problem is you will not find the court addressing the history or characteristics of the offender anywhere in connection with mitigation. The government says that the defense only argued with respect to whether there was a place suitable for the defendant, when in fact, and I'm quoting right from the record, that the defense counsel had advanced the physical infirmities of the defendant as extraordinary physical impairments justifying a reduction in Mr. Dockman's sentence, not just about where he's going to go. And that's the record 293 through 294. Now, the government itself and its position paper, which is also in the record, makes mention of the fact that the defendant does, in fact, suffer many, many different infirmities. In fact, since his offense, also it appears that his colon cancer is of recent origin, responding to the arguments that there should be a reduction in sentence based on his history and characteristics of severe chronic extraordinary illness. And the last point I wish to make to the court is this. This man is not in a hospital. Do not be misled. He is in general population. The Bureau of Prisons, prior to his incarceration, said he's likely to go to a Class 4 facility. That is a medical facility. He's not there. When he got there, he went into a general population. They claimed because he wasn't as sick as the 17 other unrebutted doctors said he was. I have a different view of why they've done that. And as far as the care he's received...
Right, that doesn't have anything to do with the reasonableness of the sentence,
well,
which is the only issue before us.
I understand
us.
It, but the point
you
was raised...
You may have other issues down the road.
What I would wish the court to do is to please look at the transcript, look at the arguments, and see that, in fact, these issues so vital to the sentence were not discussed at all and should be remanded for discussion. Thank you very much.
All right. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.